online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, here at the mothership, kissing the dirt of KPFA. Happy to be here on equinoctial tour, going so splendidly. Me and the Suzanne Afghani coat, which is alive. It's alive. We're all in a Terry Pratchett novel. We're all in the Arabian Nights. What story do we want to be in that they're all humming and alive? So, you know, shout out to the great team at Open Secret and the Equinox, where we celebrated the equinox in San Rafael on Friday, and then on to Bolinas, such a welcoming, fabulous, again, the team at Commonweal and all the people who showed up, even from as far as Casadero. Hello, such a great gathering. It is so good to gather now. And also, you know, a shout out to John Glavis and his Botierra Garden of High Nutrient Indigenous Plants from around the world. So many beings are rooting for us. Gathering medicine and mojo at each stop. Yes, it's really pretty fabulous. There's so many themes that are hopping up and down that want us to magnetize, invite, and animate Mars. So on to Santa Cruz tomorrow, well, Saturday. So it's calling all those willing to be agents of the compassionate trickster redeemer at this time of dire beauty. Magnetizing the return of Harmonia. When Mars and Venus court, as they have been in the sky now, they have a child, a daughter, Harmonia, that we can customize in any way we want with, you know, fierce aspects of beautiful nature and so that's what we're up to, pragmatic mysticism, democratic animism, applied divination, there we go, as Harmonia awaits our animation to bound onto the world stage. In Santa Cruz, it will be the last of the tour before I go back to being your agent outside Washington, D.C., many wonderful things. So Saturday, March 21st, never mind that. That's the past. I'm journeying backwards. Saturday, March 28th, this Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Cruz, 1818 Felt Street, with troubadour bard David Lynn Grimes and other local musicians, wonderful, wonderful beings. That's Saturday, 7 p.m. for the astro-political lecture talk Kahoot, woofy. And then Sunday, March 29th, from 3 to 6 p.m., is Trickster Training Tea Party, in which, again, the Santa Cruz team has conjured a fantastic, full of fermentation, more coming, menu that is wonderful. Again, as diverse as we want our microsystems to be, it's an organic buffet, many beautiful things, but it's also where we, Trickster Training Tea Party, we tease some of the principles, you know, that we hear, that we know from the talk and also just from our lives into vernal strategy. So that's great. All right. Thank you, team over there. So as I was heading out the door from the beautiful area where I often stay, thank you, hosts in San Rafael, woof woof and or yip yip, because there I was driving very slowly, as is appropriate, and there in the middle of the road was a fairly large coyote looking right at me, going, yes. And I was like, oh, I live with one of your people. I'm a big fan of your work. And it was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And it strolled calmly off to the side, but I love appointments. And then it was wonderful, again, listening to KPFA, a great treat. And a special shout out to Stephen Kent and his beautiful, fabulous partner, Ida Maxime. Fabulous show today, Music of the World, wonderful, Morocco the Wind, Wizard Women of the North, thank you, thank you, thank you. And also I've been hearing our performance that we did together, Stephen Kent, Ida Maxime, and myself in 2001, which was really great. So everything's cahooting with everything so more than perfectly. We are having a KPFA teed, but only for those who were lucky enough to pledge. That's with me and Mary Waldner, Mary's Gone Crackers, hosted by Culture in Berkeley. So more than perfectly, we are conjuring a culture of reciprocal blessing. We are hosting Alex Hosvin. Thank you. Okay. Of the Cultured Pickle Shop, of which I have been an enormous fan for years, I think, ever since I discovered it, going, oh, it's fantastic. It'll get me through any conference or anything, these wonderful bacterial beings. That we may relish life sufficiently to resolve the pickle in which we find ourselves. Alex gave me those terms. We're still working on it. So let us avail ourselves of bacteriological intelligence, getting as much information into our gut as possible, brain gut, diversity in our microsystem encourages creative flourishing in the macro. Maybe so. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you so much.
Oh, that's a delight. I guess move. There we go. Are you good?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wonderful. So off we go. Yes, I mean you've been dedicated to fermenting since you were 23.
Yes, yes, that's true. 23, we started fermenting on our countertop, and ever since I was 25, it has been my only source of professional life.
Excellent. So you are here. I like the idea that the bacteria are eager to be on radio through you.
I like that idea, too. It's a high-pressure situation.
Well, but remember, you love also Stephen Bruner, that is one of your... You heard on this radio show, and then you got his wonderful book on what medicinal beers?
It was the Sacred and Healing Herbal Beers book that I liked so much.
Ah, yes. So I love this theme that we spoke of, you know, we've spoken of backstage a little bit, but get as much information into our guts as possible is something I wrote down when you were saying it. So let's begin there. You know, even you said that your childhood was a bacteriological wasteland.
Absolutely. As you know, I think a lot of people growing up in that era in the 70s and 80s, you know, really understand.
Well, antibiotic.
Antibiotics and eating a diet of highly processed, highly pasteurized food. And, you know, that'll pretty much create a wasteland.
And reclaiming pickles and sauerkraut, because as I've said to you over and over again, but I love it, when I found your dill pickles, I took them to a highly skeptical, fantastic Hungarian ally with, a culture with a deep culture of culturing. She was like, no, there can be no American pickle that even compares to Hungarian. Oh, it is, yeah. And she ran it by Hungarian friends of hers, and they were like, this is as good as a Hungarian pickle. So how long did it take you to be able to match the incredible wise culturing of Hungary in your dill pickles?
I didn't even know that's what I was attempting to do. We just do everything just as well as we possibly can. We use the best ingredients we can. We try to pay attention very well to what we're doing. And we just try to create something that as many people as possible will find delicious. And that, you know, finding something that harkens back to your childhood and where you come from, we hear that a lot, because so many cultures, you know, beyond Hungary, but all over the world, have fermented foods as a major part of their diet. So we hear a lot of people who taste what we do, and it brings them back to an earlier time.
Well, I've been particularly grateful, and when we talk about bacteriological, wasteland, because yes, having had to, you know, take antibiotics, I'm sorry, I'm wiping out an entire civilization, but I get to start over with things from you and other going, here you go. And even the kombucha, because when I regale people, because many people know of your work and we want to spread the ministry everywhere, you know, beyond the locality of your reach. But even when I describe to people the kombucha is going, you know, she has celery kombucha, and people go, oh, because it is so clean.
Right. And when you say that, you know, like, it does touch something very deep.
Yes. No, yeah. No. Well, it must be the little remnants of our bacteriological civilization going, oh, no, 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 no.
Right. When something feeds you deeply, I think you feel that deeply.
Well, and is it the bacteria going, yay? I mean, I do want to talk about our I love, you know, the different revolutions or revelations in human society where it's like humans get over yourself. So there's the Copernican thing, get over yourself. You're not the center of the universe. But also there's the culturing bacteriological revolution going, you're mostly bacteriological civilization. You just think you're thinking, right? I mean,
right. Get over yourself. You are not the center of your own reality.
Right. Well, because we're a moving civilization with a bacteriological unique fingerprint, like more unique to us than fingerprints, right?
Yes. Yes. And really, we're sort of just really trying to map that out. I mean, that's some of the most interesting science, I think, happening right now is mapping that out.
So I love, you know, again, the realm of culture. Let's go back to, you know, because many of us, you know, the impoverished generations until now, although still, you know, it's neck and neck, you know, life and death and all, and dead food and living food. But, you know, many people grew up with, you know, a pickle was just, you know, an optional sad side thing on the side of the deli sandwich, and not knowing, again, the wonderfulness of other cultures coming here going, where are your sauerkrauts and your kombucha and your kimchi? Ah, or the kimchi. All cultures have had this. So it's, do you think the bacteria are moving people here to help, you know, American culture? And some, I just like thinking of them as running, controlling us, actually, and another.
In the best way.
In the best way.
In the most intelligent way.
Well, so people are frightened of bacteria, right? We have to undo this. Like, bacteria, guide us into making peace and negotiating with our bacteria in a more informed way that we can then have peace in the world.
Right. Well, I mean, first is just the realization, like you said, that we are mostly bacteria, that up to 90% of what constitutes us is bacteria. So if you really start to think about that, you know, you cannot be at war with yourself. And so it does take really a rethinking of so much that we've been taught. But once you start to sort of enter into that world, and once you start to see that world in action, preserving your food and make it a part of you, you know, make it a major part of your diet and make it nourish you, you know, that fear, it starts to fall away. It's not instant, but it's a gradual release.
Yeah, I was talking to an ally, and he was like, oh, and I go, you know, are you eating living foods, like, you know, sauerkraut? And he's like, oh, I don't want to attempt to medicate myself. I'm like, oh, good grief. You know, so again, you know, it's part of rich culture. I mean, how far back do we know? I mean, it's very, 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 very old, right? I mean,
the fermentation. Thousands of years, yeah.
Right, so we have the yogurt cultures, and then we're going to you, who are these guys?
I mean, the yogurt cultures, the kombucha cultures, the...
So is kombucha, you know, very ancient?
Kombucha is very ancient. Wow. No one knows exactly. But, you know, probably it was
the bacteria, no.
Well, there you go. You know, it most likely was the scum that formed on someone's teapot, you know.
Oh, that's great.
Thousands of years ago.
The value of scum, yeah.
And so, you know, but eventually, in sort of the human microbial interaction that takes place, someone says, oh, well, this is delicious. Let's, you know, let's cultivate this. And let's bring it in. Yeah.
And it has, I mean, I must say, you know, when I drink, you know, kombucha, and especially yours, you know, because there's also the turmeric and what kombucha?
Oh, we do so many.
Oh, no, but remind me of that one.
Was it a ginger?
Oh, yes, turmeric and ginger. Yes, that we can be anti-inflammatory agents. I think we all need to, you know, and that's part of my dream of reinventing the entire world, of course, in which policemen once, you know, noted for their, now we'll drive up and go, I noticed from your behavior that you maybe low on vitamin D, and I have some fish liver oil for you here, but you're also, you know, and here's some turmeric and ginger tea to cool you out. I want cops and people showing up as first responders going, here, ginger turmeric tea as the first thing.
Right, the power of rhizomes.
Oh, okay, power of rhizomes, the rising power of rhizomes. So rhizomes, because how do we, you know, from my mythological domain, where we're right in the seventh of seven, Pluto, lord of underworld, bubbling god of fermentation and hidden alchemy in Capricorn, roots, underworld is soil and roots, square Uranus, going, oh, an awakening that we, to have world peace, we need to have, you know, a dynamic civilization in each one of our bodies. So rhizomes, let's do a little ode an ode to rhizomes.
Yeah, well, rhizomes, in my sort of limited soil microbiology understanding, you know, are nodules on roots that are really uptaking a lot of nutrients of the soil. And so in those, you know, and also in an intensely complex microbiology of that soil. So it gives us the ability to uptake so many nutrients, trace nutrients of the soil that, that would be difficult to get otherwise.
Hmm. And you know, just taking the cues from everything speaking to us, straight up overhead in Berkeley right now is the image of humans carrying a precious veiled burden into a safe future. So, you know, to be alive, to have our food be alive, to have our intestines alive, you know, is part of that. And then I don't even know exactly how this all fits in. I'm just tossing things to the bacteria. But Mars is straight up overhead now. Everybody put their hands straight up. There's Mars. There we go. And Mars's image right now, it's transiting KPFA's sun. Mars's image is through imagination, a lost opportunity is regained. It's right next to Uranus, the trickster, whose images, nature spirits, are seen at work in the light of the sunset. We go, ooh, everything's rooting for us. So through imagination, lost opportunity regained, if we would go the imagination of the opportunity of the helpful allies around us that we have been oblivious to until now, I mean, I backstage, I went to the previous show on herbalism and anxiety, and we tuned in, and we're like, anxiety, okay. And I go, sorry, bacteria, sorry about that. But how much do you think, again, the bacteria is responsible for our moods and our capacity to regain lost opportunities?
Right, hugely so.
And, oh, good. Oh, good.
And definitely we have always known, and we've called it gut intuition or gut instinct, but we know deeply with our gut, and we're just starting to understand now how the neurotransmitters in your intestines actually communicate with the neurotransmitters in your brain. So, you know, if you can make your gut as intelligent as possible, and when I say intelligent, I think what I really mean is an intelligence that allows you to respond to your environment, to be able to respond quickly with resilience to environmental changes, much like, say, a plant intelligence would. So if you can provide yourself with sort of the gene pool in your gut that would allow you to, it's a really complicated, that it allows you to sort of have as much information as your gut as possible to communicate with your brain and be able to respond to the environmental stresses that are going to come your way, to be able to respond to illnesses, to be able to respond to stresses. There is a lot of communication there.
It really is the harmonious antithesis to genetically modified organisms, which are, you know, and monocrops, you know, single. And I guess as Paul Stamets would say, you know, the danger of that is, you know, you have one key that opens all the doors, you know, if, you know, you can get wiped out. So really the responsive life direction as opposed to death direction, you know, is what you are working with. I mean, this increasing diversity.
It's diversity, right.
Bacteriological diversity in us.
Right, yeah. And to be able to think of yourself as an ecosystem, and we for certain know that the more diverse an ecosystem is, the more resilient it is. And so the more diverse that we can make our own personal ecosystem, the more resilient we will be.
So I think, so as is often the case when I'm out and about, even beyond, again, the reach of the Cultured Pickle Shop, beyond its locality and its intimacy, I'm those lucky enough to live within it. But when I tell people, it does, yeah, even the sound, even the description of it does get, I think there are little bacteria hopping up and down. So the turmeric and ginger is like, and then just name some things, because then I say to people, do you know there's sauerkraut with seaweed? And some people are like, oh, and some people are like, oh, I must have that now. Yeah, because you're, you know, it's this phrase that was coined, you know, far too long ago and far too true, you know, that Americans have become gustatory morons, right? That it's, you know, sweet or salty and a lot. To sort of like our entertainment, we make up for lack of substance with loudness and volume. The food is terrible and such tiny portions, too. You know, that cute joke. But wherever I was going with that, so that idea of decolonizing our bodies for amplified things. So just list some of the
list
fun
some things we do.
Yeah.
Well, we do a lot of sauerkraut. It's the main
yes.
product we do. And when I say
sauerkraut too.
It's a pickle based on cabbage, and we do 9 different types. Everything from just a straight up cabbage and salt to one with seaweed and one with Ayurvedic herbs. We take that same process of lactic acid fermentation, and we apply that to a lot of other vegetables as well. So depending on what time of the year you come in the shop, you will find pickles that are made with pumpkin or with carrots or with turnips or with rutabagas or with radishes. Or, you know, we try to really employ as many vegetables as we can. Again, sort of bringing home this idea that the more diverse you can make your ecosystem, you know, the better off you will be.
And also in your mouth, too, right? I mean, I was told by dental allies, you know, going, you want a bacteriological happy culture in your mouth that comes from eating sauerkraut, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And because, or are there bad bacteria?
Well, I mean, that's sort of not the most helpful way.
Thank you.
Of looking at things. You know, there's no, the good and bad bacteria is sort of a very, kind of made up thing that sort of maybe helps us navigate in the world. Like, this is good and this is bad. But truthfully, you have all of those, what we would consider pathogenic bacteria within you. And how those bacteria, you know, decide to or choose to, or however you want to animate them, express their genes at any given moment is, you know, what is, you know, more difficult to understand. But bacteria are everywhere, and they are everywhere within you. And the good bacteria and the bad bacteria are not as easy to sort of compartmentalize.
So it is a democratic balance that is always shifting in some way?
Ideally, yeah. I mean, you are never going to sort of maintain this sort of like pinnacle of like, now I am my absolute perfect healthy self. You know, you are constantly in process of replenishing and destroying bacteria within you. And so sort of trying to sort of keep yourself in a dynamic balance is more what you're going for. You know, we have a lot of people who come in and they say, oh, which one has the most? You know, which one's the best? And the world of what we do doesn't really function in that way.
Let's throw that category into the cauldron, which is being provided for us metaphorically by the eclipse and the Pluto realm. All right, so best, worst, into the cauldron.
Uh-huh.
Right? Everything's into the bubbling cauldron, of which you're always working with cauldrons.
Yeah, absolutely. We do. We work with a lot of cauldrons, and they bubble away. Actually, it's very fun to go into what we call our cave and even just turn off the lights, because the amount of bubbling and gurgling and hissing, it sometimes sounds like a rainforest in there. It's quite beautiful.
Now, you have talked about, and you don't have to leak any important projects you're brewing on, but the breathing.
Yes.
Of bacteria.
Yes.
Let's speak about the breathing of bacteria, because we don't often, we want to expand our
right.
Our
so when we feed bacteria, and so we're feeding them, in our case, plant sugars, they will metabolize those, and they will create all sorts of acids and enzymes, say the lactic acid that is making your pickle sour. They will also create CO2. So they are very much exhaling all the time.
Right.
Constantly.
So how are we breathing with them?
Well, I mean, when we eat a fermented food, we are very much intaking that exhale. So
okay.
Say, traditionally, when we
so
thought
it's
of...
it's a kind of a kiss.
Absolutely. It is that. Traditionally, soft drinks or you know, fermented tonics were carbonated naturally.
Right.
So what happens is the yeast present are going to eat the sugars that you're providing with them with, they will exhale. And if you're using the correct type of vessel, you will trap that exhale or that CO2 in your bottle. And when you open it, you'll have this delightfully bubbly, effervescent, tingly beverage. You know, in sort of the more modern world where we just pump CO2 into a bottle and boom, be done with it, we've sort of lost that, you know, that beauty. And so I think when you open a bottle of something and it actually contains breath within it, you react on a completely different level than if, you know, whatever else you choose to.
I love that.
Yeah.
And fermented tonic. So also what has been channeled into the toxic mimics of Pepsi and Coke, although Coke has cola nut in it, but it's still toxic and horrible here. But there is a kind of craving for that, but it's a memory. It's the toxic mimic of a real craving, because cultures have also always had what, kvass?
Yes.
And, you know, rye bread fermentation.
Yes. And beers, and, you know, brewed with different herbs and champagnes. And yes, it is a powerful cultural force.
And it is alleviating. I mean, it is, you know, if you go, oh, I've been poisoned by modernity and the modern world, or I ate something bad. We want a bubbly thing, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You can tell right away that, you know.
And it really helps. I mean, you can feel it going, blah, 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 blah. No, help is on the way. Right, for your bad judgment. So it's forgiving in a way. But you have so many, I mean, all science and all dedications such as yours to fermentation and to culture and culturing as essential to culture. So many wonderful earned meanderings of your own brilliance. You talk about bacteriologically brilliant, and I go, we love that. You say part of the brilliance of bacteria is they reproduce horizontally rather than vertically. It sounds erotic, like a bad interesting joke. But can you guide us to what does it mean that their brilliance is about reproducing horizontally rather than vertically?
So on sort of its most simple level, instead of actually needing to pass on a gene from parent to child, as in our sort of reproduction, bacteria can sort of look to their side. They can look horizontally. They can look all around them. And if they happen to see a gene that would be particularly useful, they can really just grab it.
Now, is it a loss to the donor?
To the donor? Yeah, I don't know how well understood.
Or I have plenty
process.
Here, take one.
I think really, I mean, if it's in the gene pool, it could just be grabbed. I don't necessarily think it's a parasitic relationship.
So it is like,
although
like
I'm sure
cell phones,
that too.
Cell phones coming into sync, in a way. I mean, it might be.
Right, and so the bacteria themselves are sort of constantly morphing. And, you know, I mean, this can have sort of not great consequences as well. Like, you know, bacteria can definitely outsmart us by being able to take, you know, as many genes as possible for what they need to survive. But there is sort of a brilliance in that strategy. I mean, it's an amazing evolutionary strategy to be able to look in your environment, see what it is you need, and take it for yourself and reproduce quickly.
So outsmarting us.
I mean, when we talk about, say, like an antibiotic resistant strain,
right?
Bacteria,
well, exactly.
Right.
So our hysteria has made the world more dangerous. And also, it's, you know, wiping out everything, you know, again, like Roundup, which has just been deemed by the World Health Organization as carcinogenic.
I wasn't aware that Monsanto made anything but.
Right, exactly.
Right.
This could be everything. And it's like, all right, we're with it. We want to partner with everything. We want to partner with the oil and the coal staying in the ground. We want to partner with the bacteria. We want to partner with the bacteria using us to bring lawsuits against Monsanto. That's very witty of the bacteria. So outsmarting us, you know, remembering one of my favorite humans, a frequent guest on show, Ellen LeConte, with her book Life Rules, saying bacteria have already solved the innumerable crises that we, as a species are now facing. And we go, because they learned how to reproduce on light, you know, photosynthesis,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, overcrowding, and they kind of handled that. And that idea of, the antidote to deadness. Now, one of the factors that you also bring in wonderfully that you mentioned, you said the taste of time. I love this. We're gonna take a short break in soonish, but I wanted to just bring this up so that we can resume. Okay, here's Saturn. Saturn is stationing now. Saturn is the intelligence of time. And you talked about the taste of time. Again, antidote to fast food.
Yes.
Ancient food. So we're going to come right back on the taste of time because it's so intriguing. We are speaking with great ally Alex Hausen of the Cultured Pickle Shop. Again, culturedpickleshop.com. We will be right back after a very short break. And I am also on to Santa Cruz this weekend, 7 p.m. Saturday night will be the Astrological Political Lecture Theater with David Lynn Grimes as Troubadour Bard. Again, powerful kind of end of tour in Santa Cruz, which is so powerfully magic. Information can be found at coyotenetworknews.com, how you can get tickets. And there's a Sunday tea party from 3 to 6 p.m., which is, we're just taking tea party back. It is a dedicated trickster training to tease into our molecules of being collaborative strategy for the spring. This is Caroline Casey. We will be taking calls. Why not? Sure. Shall we do that?
We can take some calls.
We'll take some calls after the break. You can call in 800-958-9008 or 510-848-4425, and we'll be right back.
She shook the constellation and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Hold it down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Jenny, Jenny, come blow my Jenny home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, here, physically, in the mothership, KPFA, for this week, because I have one more rousing sequence of events on my equinoctial tour, which is going so fabulous, you know, picking up medicine from each place, San Rafael and Bolinas, and on to Santa Cruz, where I will be Saturday, this Saturday night, 7 p.m., at the Center for Spiritual Living, 1818 Felt Street, Santa Cruz, with Troubadour Bard David Lynn Grimes. And then the next day, from 3 to 6 p.m., we have a fantastic organic buffet with many pickling things. That will be trickster training tea party, too, whereby we can even more throw things into the cauldron and with Coyote ladle out blessings. And each one of us customize our own Harmonia, the child of Mars and Venus. And again, that will be 3 to 6 p.m. in Santa Cruz at the Center for Spiritual Living on Sunday. Yay. All right, so we are willing to take calls. My splendiferous ally guest, Alex Hausen. Oh, I'm so sorry about your name. Please say it for me.
Hausen.
Hausen. Oh, yes. Hausen. Okay. Dutch.
Yes, that is its
ha.
Version. Yeah.
And ha is the way, the breath, aloha, full of breath. Alex Hausen of the Cultured Pickle Shop that I've admired, and she's kept me alive for years. Every time I would come through going, oh, fill me up with enough culture and kombucha and pickles and sauerkraut so that I can survive upcoming conferences and whatnot. Anyway, really great. Your website is culturedpickleshop.com. And you can join us by calling 510-848-4425 if you have a blessing, a conundrum, a query, especially about culture and fermentation, to ask Alex. So where we were, this completely interesting thing that you said, so provocative, you'd been speaking about the taste of time, not time the herb, time the T-I-M-E. Can you guide us into the taste of time?
Well, time is a primary ingredient to everything that we do. And how I like to think of time is that it softens and rounds the flavors. And so I think when you have sort of superb pickle, a perfect kombucha, something that just makes your toes tingle.
Mm.
It's like a story in your mouth. It's like a perfect circle. It kind of takes you everywhere, but it doesn't sort of assault you in one particular place.
Ah, and so I mean, I think this is so important to all our whole kind of politically effective, spiritual, intellectual, everything, life, complexity. You know, so much of the beautiful music of Middle East and many, many cultures, and thank you, Stephen Kent, for your great work over the years doing this. You know, it provides us with complex culture, 13 beats from Afghanistan, all this, which I think feed, you know, I think that makes us more intelligent. And what you're talking about also is a complex brewing. You know, when you say that the softens and rounds the flavors like a story, like a circle. Well, this seems like, well, yeah, this seems like one of the central points of life.
Yes, but we tend to lose it. And I think because we're generally undernourished and undersatisfied, we tend to look towards things that provide sort of this instant jolt, be it, you know, very sweet or very salty or very fatty. And we're sort of always kind of searching for something that touches us on just a more satisfying level.
Well, you know, there is the gorge theory of pleasure, which really doesn't work so much, which is just, it's very fast. It's like volume of what we call culture media, or volume of food. And, you know, what you're dedicated to and which we can feel on many levels is, you know, resonance going, oh, there's a flavor, and then there's another flavor behind that. And, you know, it's where wine connoisseurs kind of go. But this is pickle bacteriological connoisseurs. And I just wanted also to go back to bacteriological emotional well-being. So your own journey from growing up in a bacteriological wasteland and as a young child, what with antibiotics and whatnot.
Oh, constantly.
And that does have a depressive.
Right. Without being able to sort of fully articulate it at that time, it very much has a depressive effect.
Right. And so our feelings are not just our own. You know, the bacteria could be like, oh, sad, it was good. So then, you know, so let's also speak of the history in many cultures of fermenting, because then you did start off also, you were macrobiotic person.
Right. I mean, that's really fully how I entered into this world.
Miso, umeboshi plums, guide us into that, again, which makes soybeans our friend.
Yes, which makes them, that we're able to assimilate them.
Right.
But yeah, I was, you know, I've searched through a lot of alternative diets over the last decades. And I think that's really important. I think it's really important to sort of navigate your food culture and see what works for you. And nothing's going to work for you forever. And you're sort of constantly listening to your intuition and letting that guide you. But I did have a flirtation with macrobiotics, which, you know, even though it's not really what I follow any longer, it did lead me to this path of traditional Japanese fermented foods. And the very first fermented project that my husband and I embarked upon was making miso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you made the garlic cloves fermented in miso.
Right. Now we do pickle in miso, although we don't make miso anymore,
right,
unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but that's, again, cultures. I'm just proffering, you know, and as something, again, to which you are dedicated. But the idea of, you know, Japanese culture, you know, pre-modern, complex like everything, but quite exquisite, quite, you know, the realm of aesthetics in Japanese culture is very, the Heian period was, which is a date that I had, you know, where the first novels were written by women, and the everything you did was meaningful, the wearing the cherry blossom print over the whatever, you spoke in poetry, and then the culinary aesthetic equivalent of complexity. So Japan and its pickled vegetables, can you speak to Bring them alive for us.
Right. I mean, well, Japan is such an interesting example because it, more so than any culture that I know of, really kind of the word pickle is so complex. It really is more so than a straight line to a sour, like we tend to think of in the West. Japanese culture uses a lot of what we might think of as waste products to actually pickle in, because a lot of those waste products are the most nutrient-rich part of the food. So say when milling rice became commonplace in Japan, and white rice became the norm, all of the rice bran was left over, which is actually the most nutritious part of the rice, obviously. But instead of leaving that as waste, the monks in Japan, generally sort of the holders of intense wisdom of a civilization, would pickle vegetables in it. As a good example there, yeah.
Yes. Mm. So again, yes, complexity. Well, let's go to our first caller, who is Leif from Berkeley.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Hey, pretty good.
I used to go to this restaurant here in, I guess it's Berkeley on Solano Avenue. I think it was called Kathmandu. And they had, along with their incredible vegetable dishes from Himalayans, I guess, they had these little tiny pieces of pickles, and these they had cardamom type, and it just was amazing. I just felt like so much energy came out of these little condiments, just a little tiny bit on there. Anyway, I was gardening yesterday, and the younger man, 40 or 30 or so, lives upstairs. He's becoming a chocolatier. And just as I was leaving, he's pulling out a huge bucket full of what looked like almonds. And he says, which was kind of funny, he says he's just learning to do this with his partner. And he pulls out one, he gives me three of them. And he says they're organically fair trade grown in the mountains of Belize. And I'm saying, go, dude. I just thought that was so funny. That this young couple is just going for this amazing food, chocolate. Speaking of foods that change and move in your mouth when you eat them.
That's good, and make us smarter, may it be so. Well, thank you, and thank you for bringing before our collective altar the cardamom pickle. Oh, I must have it immediately. But thank you, Leif.
Well, I'm actually really glad that he brought up the Himalayas. Because one of a trip that I took quite a long time ago to India and Nepal was, I think, probably the first sort of conscious ingestion that I had of pickled vegetables was in Nepal. Mm. And we would be trekking through the mountains, and you'd stop and you'd get your bowl of rice and lentils, and sure, after like weeks, the bowl of rice and lentils could be pretty bland and maybe even slightly depressive and boring. But when you add on, you know, that small amount of spicy mustard greens that someone would pull out of the ceramic pot under her counter, the whole thing, you know, became dazzling.
Dazzling.
And so, you know, traditional cultures, yes, they ferment to preserve, and they ferment to add flavor, but it also just makes the ability to have, a very simple diet, it makes it something that it elevates that.
Well, and digestion, I mean, it brings it alive and moves it through. It makes sense, you know, again, cultures, everything begins to make sense. Like, of course, if one were so given to eat pastrami, you would have to eat it with sauerkraut just to digest fat.
Yes,
really.
And cultures have always known this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, somehow we've gotten on to this highly processed, high-fat diet without then, like, gifting ourselves a digestive system to deal with it, and here we find ourselves in this pickle.
And have you, right, exactly, and we find ourselves in this situation occasioned by a lack of pickle. We're in a pickle because of a lack of pickle, but have you ever made cardamom pickles? I'm just so enamored by...
Oh, I'm trying to think. I must have used cardamom. Oh, let's see. Mm. We do put cardamom in the preserved lemons that we do. I have done a cardamom kombucha before. Yeah, cardamom, super sophisticated flavor.
Yeah, cardamom kombucha, yeah. must find. Well, I think also I like, you know, Michael Pollan's animism in which, you know, the apples are moving us around, or the whatever it is going, well, I want to grow in America, you go. I like the idea that the cardamom and the spices, it's part of our ongoing... Or my, you know, all of us, yes, really ongoing theme of the dance of, you know, Venus and Mars, you know, where there's too much Mars, let there be Venus, the traditional cultivated arts, which includes, you know, what you're keeping alive, Alex, culture and complexity and art of food and art of enhancing our own community. You know, I mean, these are all, and I think antidotes to Mars, the barren wasteland of our guts, you know, then vulnerable to people taking whatever they take, anti-indigestion, other things, and,
sure,
and laxatives.
To,
and,
right, things,
you know,
to mask their symptoms, yeah.
Yeah, to mask the symptoms and ill culture. And also, I mean, I'm going for this, let me run it by you, to make us stupid.
Sure, sure. I mean, right. I mean, if you have a wasteland in your gut, there's just no way that you're going to have a vibrant mental clarity. It's just impossible.
Yeah, vibrant mental clarity. The bacteria are speaking so well through you. A vibrant mental clarity. Let's go to our next caller, an agent of vibrant mental clarity, Cynthia in Oakland. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you, Caroline, and thank you, Alex. I am going to give a plug for a movie that I feel fits right into this. It's called Microbirth. And it is a group of scientists and neurobiologists neurochemists, people that are really fascinated with bacteria and what is happening to the children's guts who are being taken from their mothers via C-section after an onslaught of antibiotics before they're born. They're starting to show the correlation of a higher incident of gut problems in these children as a result that they see the correlation between an increase in antibiotics pre-birth. And then also it associates with the cesarean section because the baby doesn't get the chance to come through the mother's body and be exposed to all those wonderful bacteria that are not just in the gut, but also in her birth canal. So I hope that you all have a look at this movie, Microbirth, because it's talking also about the complexity of bacteria are diminishing. So bacteria are becoming extinct, if you will, or they're changing. So it's a really fascinating movie. So
thanks
a lot.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, we will follow your guidance. Thank you. Thank you so much, Cynthia. Yes, speak, Alex, to this issue of bacteria becoming extinct.
Right. And so when we see that, you know, in the larger world, that's basically because of habitat destruction. And so, we should all really begin to think of ourselves as creating habitat.
In our bodies.
Absolutely.
Right. And
yeah.
In our gardens and in our compost piles.
Yes. All
and
of that.
In our worm temples.
Yes.
Yes. So bacteria becoming extinct, they're the habitat. So welcome, come live in our bodies, come, we will keep you safe, you'll keep us safe, we'll make a deal.
Feed them and they'll come.
Say what?
Feed them, they will come.
Feed them, they will come.
Yeah.
So, yes, I want to drink kombucha every day and sauerkraut every day and pickles every day. I do. My, you know, in the inside community is going, yay, okay. So what do you recommend? I mean, I know it's plebeian and probably a silly question, but I'm asking it anyway. What do you recommend for people to just begin to start and see and add life to your, you know, intellectual,
right. Yeah.
Your intellectual intestines? You know, are you feeding your intestines enough intellectual material?
Yeah, and you sort of need to, like, maybe rethink what you think of as your food groups. You know, what I think fermented foods are a food group onto themselves. And so I think the easiest way to start is just, you know, every time you have a meal, put a little bit on the side of your plate. Or, you know, and just you will start to see that it's not so mysterious and it's not so confusing. And it's something that will add, you know, both like a zing and a pizzazz to whatever you're eating and also make you able to digest and assimilate what you're eating as well.
A zing and a pizzazz. Well, that's great. Well, I think it's also as we transcend being gustatory morons and provide, you know, ourselves, you know, it's with more things that expanding our repertoire, then our body can know and go, I want more of that. Turmeric and ginger kombucha must have that. Because it knows then. It's like, that's what I need. Or I need this thing. Because
right. And how much more sort of liberating, really, and empowering is that, rather than like always sort of looking to like, what am I supposed to eat? What am I supposed to eat? What's the newest thing? What's going to save me? Because really that's going to leave you sort of always searching and never really fully getting in touch with what it is that you're calling out for.
Yes. Responding, going, I want this particular thing. A call and response, intimacy. Well, let's go to our next patient caller, John in North Bay. John in North Bay, welcome.
Hi. Synchronicity. All spring flowers welcome you to the Bay Area.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Synchronicity, the NHK, it's the Japanese network. I saw right before your show came on, they were talking about fermenting turnips, and they highlighted a traditional Japanese, small company, I guess you would call it, shop, and the woman is the daughter of her father, and she's the only one that has the actual recipe. It's a 2-year fermentation process with these giant Japanese white turnips. And they put them in barrels. It's old style. And synchronicity for your show today. Okay, one other thing is, there was a 3,000 foot wide asteroid will pass by the Earth on Friday. I just heard this on RT, what is that, Russia Today TV, and your comments, and plus all spring flowers welcome you, Caroline.
That's adorable. Thank you very much, John. Reciprocal blessing made abound for all beings. So, synchronicity, NHK, yes, the asteroid possibly depositing more fun bacteria on our planet. We don't know. I have no firm opinion on that matter. But fermenting turnips, I like that the turnips are booking the airwaves now, apparently. The show previous, some other way going, turnips, it's our turn to grab the microphone. And turnips are here in the studio, rising up through us. Do you want to be a voice for turnips, Alex?
Oh, turnips are fabulous.
Yeah, and undervalued.
Undervalued.
Because very often you go, oh, I thought it was a potato, but it's a turnip.
That used to be my response.
As little girls going, oh, whip turnips, oh, and then kind of interesting, funky.
Yeah, I mean, but adding kind of like a sweet kind of earthy with like a slight bitter biteness to them, and lovely color. You know, around here we get so many different types of turnips, be it gold or be it red, and they bleed their colors out into brine in the most fabulous way. Mm. Big turnip fan.
Because I want to go back, yes, turnips, roots. Because, you know, part of the quippy playing with death and things, you know, in the astro language, late astrologer friend would say, you know, when you have Pluto transits, and we're all having Pluto transits in a sense, to the underworld, to go to the underworld, he said, you're under pressure, so you want to eat things that are under pressure, like espresso. Espresso is very good for being under pressure, so I go, that's very witty. But then we also go, all right, the underworld, which we want to not demonize, is soil, roots. I just want to go back to the root realm, to the turmeric and ginger realms, and the root and turnips and all of those guys too. Because in kind of mythological guidance, it would say if something's a problem, you know, go to the related area. You know, it would. I mean, see if this appeals to you. It would say that, you know, fear and depression, in the underworld, kind of like, would be alleviated by root things. More ode to roots. Okay, turnips, the humble turnips, the beets, and then of course turmeric and ginger making a big necessary comeback because they're the anti-inflammatories. Yeah.
Right.
A toast
to that.
A toast to turnips. And the giant turnips, the fermenting turnips that are speaking on our behalf, going, if you want to be more intelligent, you know, have more flavors, you know, all of that. So and then, you know, part of your dedication, the moon has entered Cancer right now, which is the word culture. you know, when we look up the word culture in a good dictionary, all of the first many definitions are, what are we cultivating in the soil, and then also in a petri dish, and then also in the sense of pickles. And then way down the list, you know, by analogy, is human culture, you know, music and stuff. So we go, all right, so, and the moon right now is in Cancer, and remember just the mythic themes through imagination, lost opportunity is regained. So fermenting, many cultures, kept it alive in adversity, again, like, you know, Eastern European or the Himalayas, all of that, but out of American life into the stagnant 50s and conformity. If you want to serve the overlords, you know, eat no pickles. And then you're bringing this back into a kind of bacteriological, aesthetic, culinary literacy. So is that through imagination, lost opportunity, regained, meaning we need this to be smarter? We can't have democracy without pickles. I
second that.
Okay.
And I mean, it's a really fabulous time to be doing this. I mean, the amount of recognition of this work, it just in the last couple decades has exploded. Generally, when people see now what we do, you know, they're eager to start a conversation. Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, it was like, what? Like, what?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, so, but you've seen it all because you've been dedicated for decades, really, and it is beautiful. And people come from all over the world to view your bubbling cauldrons, right? And then going, will you ship? And you go, no, we will not ship.
No.
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 No, no, I love that. Yeah.
And furthermore.
Yeah, I mean, part of what's really beautiful about this business is it doesn't apply itself well to the large model.
Right.
It really doesn't. It is a living, breathing product. And so shipping it long distances and trying to control its evolution, you know, over time, over space, it just doesn't make sense. And so we are fortunate enough to live in an environment where we have, a very interested consumer base, and we're able to sell everything that we make here. And I have no interest in adding to our...
But inspiring. I mean, again, people hear what you've done, and then also all the lore rising up, and they, you know, it is easier to get pickles and beautiful things on the East Coast or Washington, D.C. than it was. I mean, they're not quite as wonderful. They're not quite as wonderful.
And
as
more
yours,
people willing to sort of experiment on their own, which I always
encourage.
Right.
Well, let's go to intriguing, I hope this is safe, caller who is Paul in an airplane over San Francisco. Are you there, Paul?
Carolyn, if you look up in the sky, you will see the first 100% solar-powered airplane flying from the west to the east, from San Francisco to Berkeley, going around the world. Did you know that this is happening?
No.
The first solar-powered aircraft in the history of the world. It's easy to see from the ground because it is the size of a 747, and it's got thousands of solar panels on it.
Really? And yeah. You're in it right now, you say?
Yes, I say. And we're flying from China over San Francisco, and you'll be able to see it because it is huge. It is the size of a 747, and it's flying only at like 7,000 feet.
But you said is it over KPFA studios right now?
No, but it will be. But it's because of the weather conditions and the long distance. I keep track of it every day, and it's approaching San Francisco and Berkeley right now from China.
From China, and it's loaded with sauerkraut.
And white turnips from Japan.
Oh, that's right. In fact, the entire plane was carved out of a giant pickled white turnip.
Yes. And it's got solar panels, huge, thousands of them. That's why it's so big, because there's only two pilots aboard it, and each one flies for 20 minutes and sleeps for 20 minutes. And they're doing this around the world. This is the first solar-powered flight of an airplane around the world. So all those people that worry about contrails, well, we just wiped them out, because all planes from now on will be solar-powered.
Well, they're not worried about contrails, but we won't mention the dread word that sends people into conniption fits. No, we won't mention that. I'm tempted to believe you. We're over too soon. I don't have time to believe you. But thank you so much, Paul. We will Google such a thing. Thank you very much, Alex. How wonderful. The KPFA will be convening at a private pledging party. You might be lucky enough next pledge drive to pledge to such a fun thing. So it's also the www.culturedpickleshop.com. Also, join me in Santa Cruz. CoyoteNetworkNews.com will give you the all the things, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you so much. Thank you, Alex.
This is Brian Edwards Tekert. Very excited to be working on Upfront weekdays at 7 a.m. with a talented team.
I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Each morning, we bring you the latest from the streets of Oakland to the halls of the state capital, from Los Angeles to Afghanistan. We deliver in-depth analysis, hard-hitting interviews, and debates on the issues that affect our lives.
And I'm Eileen Alfandari, working with the KPFA News team to bring you breaking news from across the state, the region, and the world. We'll keep you updated on the latest throughout the morning on KPFA.
It's Upfront, a statewide collaboration that brings you information that matters. That's every weekday morning at 7 a.m. right after Democracy Now! Keep it locked to KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area, KFCF 88.1 FM in the Central Valley, or listen online at kpfa.org. I'm Brian Edwards Tekert. See you at 7.
You are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.